Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
You got to ask yourself, does the person have the demeanor, the experience to be able to step in a role like that? Nancy does.
Governor Mike Dunleavy picks a running mate for this year's election. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, May 23rd. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, a structure fire spreads into nearby trees amid warm and windy weather in Anchorage.
Everybody in Anchorage worries about this exact scenario because we all know that the fuels have been filling in over the years.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
On June 11th, Alaska will have the first round of a special election to fill the open seat in Congress. Every Alaskan voter will receive a ballot in the mail. In the June 11th primary, you can only vote for one person. The ranking happens later. Pick your favorite candidate, sign, and get a friend to sign as well. Then mail it back. And remember that June 11th is the Pick One primary. This message sponsored by Alaskans for Better Elections.
Governor Mike Dunleavy has chosen Corrections Commissioner and former state legislator Nancy Dahlstrom as his running mate in this year's election. At a news conference in Anchorage today, Dunleavy said Dahlstrom's executive and legislative experience makes her well-suited to take over the state's top job at a moment's notice if she had to.
You never know. You could trip down a flight of stairs. You could, you know, choke on a piece of steak. You got to ask yourself, does the person have the demeanor, the experience to be able to step in a role like that? Nancy does.
Dahlstrom announced her resignation as the head of the Corrections Department this afternoon, minutes before the campaign announcement. If Alaska voters re-elect Dunleavy in November, Dahlstrom would become lieutenant governor and the head of the Division of Elections. She says she did not hesitate when Dunleavy asked her to run for the number 2 spot in Alaska government.
This is my chosen home. And so being able to serve Alaskans in any capacity is something that I've always enjoyed and look forward to. So this is a great opportunity.
Dahlstrom was a Republican state lawmaker from 2003 until she resigned in 2010 and briefly served as a military advisor to then-Governor Sean Parnell. She became head of the Corrections Department in 2018. The current Lieutenant Governor Kevin Meyer announced in December that he would not seek another term. In the new state election system, the candidates for governor and lieutenant governor run as a team in the August primary. Other teams running for governor and lieutenant governor include Democrat Les Guerra and Jessica Cook, Republican Charlie Pierce and Edie Grunwald, and nonpartisan Bill Walker and Heidi Dragas. The top 4 teams will advance to the November ballot. After rescuing a woman from a deck, firefighters extinguished a wildland blaze on Anchorage's hillside overnight that started as a structure fire and spread into surrounding brush and trees amid windy and warm weather. Aided with a helicopter dropping buckets of water on the flames, crews had the so-called Zircon fire fully contained by about 1 a.m. today, according to the Alaska Division of Forestry. One person in the home was reported as injured and transported to a local hospital, though they were treated and released within hours, according to the Anchorage Fire Department. The quick work kept the fire to less than 1 acre, but further spread could have had much more severe impacts for residents of Alaska's largest city living nearby in the foothills of the Chugach Mountains. Here's Cale Casey, a fire information officer with the Division of Forestry.
Everybody in Anchorage worries about this exact scenario because we all know that the fuels have been filling in over the years. They keep growing every year, no matter whether you like it or not.
Anchorage Fire Department Assistant Chief Alex Boyd says city firefighters were the first to arrive after the initial 911 call about 9 p.m. Sunday, and they used ladders to reach a woman stranded on a deck attached to an upper floor. Still, Boyd says the wind quickly sent pieces of burning material into the nearby woods.
There was a heck of a lot of potential there, and as I was driving up to the incident last night, I remember thinking, well, this is going to be a lot of work. It's going to be a long week or two is what this seems like this will be.
But Casey with the Division of Forestry says the firefighters also laid out hoses around the perimeter so the wildfire's growth was limited almost immediately. Then, he says, the Matsu Hilitak helicopter repeatedly scooped up water to dump on the fire, and the Gannett Glacier initial attack fire crew used chainsaws to cut a line around it to stop any spreading flames. The crews were reportedly mopping up around 3:30 a.m. Casey says fire officials are looking forward to a possible change in the weather ahead of the upcoming Memorial Day weekend.
And we're hoping that we get cooler weather, and we're hoping that we get moisture, but hope is not a strategy, as we say. So everybody needs to be vigilant, and we're all definitely in this together.
A burn ban remains in effect for Anchorage, along with warnings for much of South Central Alaska. Alaska state troopers say a man from Miami has died in Skagway after going for a swim in front of a docked cruise ship. Troopers identified the man as 32-year-old William Anthony Rodriguez. Authorities say an eyewitness saw a man sink into the water near the bow of the Norwegian Jewel cruise ship on Friday afternoon. Multiple agencies began a search. Divers recovered the body on Saturday. Since the war in Ukraine began, people displaced by the fighting have flooded into neighboring countries. Now, some of them are beginning to arrive in Alaska, thanks to a local nonprofit and a new federal program that allows Americans to sponsor Ukrainians. Alaska Public Media's Adeline Baxter has more.
Exhaustion and relief were written on the faces of arrivals on Condor Flight 2050 as they walked into the lobby of Ted Stevens International Airport in Anchorage Saturday morning. Family members and volunteers from the Ukraine Relief Program were there to greet them with flowers and hugs. 12 people from Ukraine arrived over the weekend, and hundreds more are expected in the coming weeks. Maria and Anton Bershitska made the 9-hour flight with their 3-year-old son, Yaroslav. They spent 3 months in Poland after fleeing their home in February.
We came from Bucha. It's Kyiv district. Our city was destroyed by war, and many people died there, and all infrastructure of Bucha was destroyed too, and it was awful.
Now they'll stay with family here in Anchorage, thanks in part to the federal Uniting for Ukraine program, which allows Ukrainians, sponsored by U.S. citizens, to come for a 2-year parole period.
We will stay here in this program during 2 years, and we hope that the peace in our Ukraine will be, and we can back there. We hope so.
The United Nations estimates that more than 6 million Ukrainians have been displaced since Russia invaded earlier this year. That number will rise as the conflict drags on.
It's been sort of surreal at times. I mean, as an American, it's hard to understand.
Mike Robbins is the finance and outreach chair for the Ukraine Relief Program and Anton's uncle. His wife is Ukrainian, and their family has been closely following news of what's happening back home. The local nonprofit run by members of New Chance Christian Church received generous financial support from the Rasmussen Foundation and others, allowing them to purchase plane tickets for displaced Ukrainians. Robbins says donations are welcome, but it's not what they need most right now.
What we really need is people who would like to help us sponsor them into the country. Then we help with job placement and all of the other things that go along with coming.
He says they hope to bring up to 1,000 people to Alaska over the next few weeks and months. In Anchorage, I'm Adeline Baxter.
The State Labor Department says Alaska had about 6,700 more jobs last month than a year earlier, but jobs in most sectors have not recovered to pre-pandemic levels. In a report released Friday, the department says there were about 11,800 fewer jobs last month than there were in April 2019, the year before the pandemic. The biggest year-over-year gain was in the leisure and hospitality sector, which had about 3,900 more jobs last month than in April 2021. The transportation, trade, and utility sector had about 1,400 more jobs than the prior year, and there were about 500 more jobs in oil and gas. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new community fridge could help address food insecurity in Anchorage.
Every day we're talking to people who, you know, lost all their household income, are turning to programs like SNAP and our food pantries. It has remained elevated ever since.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you are a hunter, birder, or outdoor enthusiast, the U.S. Geological Survey is asking for help tracking the bird populations in Alaska. The USGS manages a nationwide bird banding program, and every year, thousands of birds are marked with small, numbered leg bands. If you see, find, or harvest a banded bird, please report the band number online at reportband.gov. The information provided will help inform how bird populations may be changing. This message sponsored by the USGS Alaska Science Center.
A man has been indicted for enticing a minor in Bethel and possessing child pornography. 40-year-old Kevin Brian Powell was arrested in his hometown of Spokane yesterday and now faces extradition to Alaska. According to the charging documents from the Alaska State Troopers, Powell was in Bethel in early May while he was texting a girl under the age of 16. He was trying to entice her to engage in sexual acts with him, and he was soliciting nude photos of her, allegedly. Powell was charged by a grand jury with 4 counts of enticing a minor and 4 counts of child pornography possession. Well, the past few years have been rough for Alaskans who suffer from food insecurity and don't know where their next meal will come from. People lost jobs in the pandemic, and now inflation is driving up food prices. To help combat hunger in Anchorage, a grassroots organization has set up a community fridge in an area that chronically struggles with food insecurity. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more.
On a sunny Saturday afternoon, Ziana Brownlow is showing some volunteers the ins and outs of the community fridge in Mountain View, a North Anchorage neighborhood that's one of the most ethnically diverse communities in the country. Brownlow says about 10% of Anchorage residents, upwards of 30,000 people, suffer from food insecurity.
So 1 in every 10 people that we know doesn't know where they're going to get their food from. They might have to decide if they're going to pay for their prescriptions or pay for gas or if they're going to pay for food.
Brownlow has been active in food activism since 2018 when she ran a blog for grassroots organization Food for Thought Alaska, writing about the ways local businesses were helping keep people fed. That changed with the pandemic.
My sort of like shop small, eat local mission got drowned in this wave of like save Anchorage and, you know, keep the restaurants open. And so I stepped away from that and food blogging and just kind of looked at the very obvious need of like employees being laid off and the increase of homelessness services and like the increase of need at the food bank.
She began to look at the concept of community fridges, which had popped up across the country in cities like Miami, Atlanta, and Chicago, and started organizing with community partners to get a space set up in Anchorage. While it's been a chronic problem for years, food insecurity ballooned during the pandemic as people lost their jobs, says Cara Durr, Chief of Advocacy and Public Policy at the Food Bank of Alaska.
In the beginning of the pandemic, we saw the level of need shoot up about 75%, which of course is just unprecedented. Every day we were talking to people who, you know, lost all their household income, are turning to programs like SNAP and our food pantries. And, you know, it has remained elevated ever since.
Durr says even as the pandemic has winded down, new issues like inflation are keeping food insecurity above pre-pandemic levels.
So we're seeing those levels creep up really close to what we saw at the height of the pandemic, which is pretty scary.
Brownlow hopes the community fridge complements the work the food bank is already doing. The fridge is tucked right off Mountain View Drive. It's about the size of a small shed with a couple double door fridges inside, like the kind you might see in a grocery store. There are some stands for fruit and some metal shelves drilled into the wall for canned goods. Several stacks of cup noodles boxes and granola bars stand in a corner. The outside is weatherized, and Brownlow says it was bear-proofed as well. For consumers looking to get something to eat, it's as easy as walking up and taking it. Volunteers check on the fridge during the day. Brownlow says donations can be dropped off at the fridge doors, and they're not just accepting food. On a table near the volunteer sign-up is a stack of rapid COVID tests, and Brownlow says other non-perishable, non-food items like masks, gloves, and hand sanitizer are accepted as well.
Diapers, baby formula, hygiene products, please share them, okay? I'm looking in here and I'm seeing like pads and there's juice and there's Similac in here. It like, just makes my heart so happy.
Brownlow says she looks forward to seeing other harm reduction items like bandages, contraception, and fentanyl test strips in the fridge in the future. While the fridge isn't limited to just food, Brownlow says it is limited to what kinds of food and goods it can accept at this point.
So we don't have a freezer, and it's easier for us to avoid any like mishandling of food if we don't have any raw meats, any frozen meats, any frozen foods like that that might need to remain frozen. So we don't want anything like that there. We don't want medications, alcohol, furniture, clothing.
Brownlow says in addition to Mountain View, the neighborhoods of Muldoon, Spinard, Government Hill, and Midtown have been targeted by the USDA as areas with high rates of food insecurity. She hopes to see fridges in those communities in the future. The Mountain View Community Fridge is now open every day from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
There's a new pilot around town in Bethel. Her name is Delina Fox, and she's one of the world's first female Yupik commercial pilots. KYUK's Olivia Eberts flew with her during her second week on the job.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Let's roll.
Pacific Rough on the roll there, too.
Pilot Delina Fox is flying a silver and blue-striped Cessna 207 to Tuntutuliak. At 26 years old, Fox is at least a decade younger than her plane. It's the end of Fox's first two-week shift as a commercial pilot. She says the first 10 days have been exhausting, but interesting.
Lots of learning and very challenging in a good way.
Fox grew up mostly in Kipnuk and a little in Quigilingok and Bethel, too. That meant lots of flying back and forth between villages. The first time Fox remembers actually being excited by the idea of flying was in middle school, when she flew with a female pilot for the first time. It sparked the idea that maybe she could fly, too.
That's kind of like where it felt real, like it's achievable, you know?
Only about 6% of professional American pilots are women. At regional airline Grant Aviation, where Fox works, only 5 of their 60 pilots are female, and only 5 are Yupik.
She's the first that I can think of.
That's Delina's uncle, Andy Fox. Like Delina, Andy works for Grant. He's worked for them on and off for 49 years. Are you proud?
Why wouldn't I be? Yeah, sure am.
Fox is the first female Yupik pilot to work for Grant. But there's been at least one other female Yupik commercial pilot before her. Lindsay Jean LaRue flew commercially in the YK Delta from 2007 to 2010. Fox first worked near airplanes before pursuing her dream of flying them. She worked for a few years at Raven, selling airplane tickets. Then, during the first year of the pandemic, Raven went bankrupt and she lost her job. That was the final push she needed.
And I was like, well, I'm just going to go for it. So I did. I moved to Anchorage and I went to flight training.
Less than 2 years later, she had her private pilot's license, her instructor's certification, and her commercial pilot's license. On the way to Tuntutuliak, we chat about how the job has been.
Have you gotten to fly to Kipnuk?
Yeah, that was my first village, actually.
That's so magical.
It was.
When she flew to her home village, her family said lots of people came to greet her at the plane. Once we land in Tuntutuliak, Fox wastes no time in unloading her cargo. She passes each box to the gate agent, a man with a four-wheeler. There's a box with a grocery store sheet cake and another with blue cupcakes. It's someone's birthday in Tuntutuliak. The gate agent swaps the cargo for passengers, a girl and her mom. Fox greets them and takes their luggage. While they board the plane, the dad who's dropped them off, Andrew Frank, says it's incredible to have a pilot in the YK Delta who can communicate Yuktun with them.
It's always very impressive and make us a very proud that we see native pilots and elders that don't know how to speak English can always talk to them.
Fox is speaking Yuktun and flying locals around the YK Delta has been her dream since middle school. But she didn't always think that dream could be a reality.
For me personally, it was really hard to even just leave Bethel to go to flight training and to go to school and to do something that I never saw as a successful goal. And I want more people to know that doing what they want to do is actually very achievable.
Helping people learn how to fly without leaving Bethel is the reason she got her instructor certificate. According to Grant Aviation, when there was a local flight school in Bethel, there were more pilots from the YK Delta. Now, Fox is one of the only ones. As far as what's next for Fox, she may move on to bigger aircraft one day. But for now, she's content to fly in her home region.
I feel like everything I have on the ground dissipates. Keeping the plane in the air, that's all I have to care for, you know. So everything else, like all my problems or all my things I need to do in life, is left on the ground when I take off.
Left side Delta, cross one left side Delta behind Cherokee, 7 for Alpha, taxi via Charlie.
In Bethel, I'm Olivia Eberts.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Alaska State Library Talking Book Center has audiobooks and more for children and adults who are unable to read standard print. Learn more at talkingbooks.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Library Network. Alaska employers, did you know there is a no-cost, no-deductible way to bond at-risk employees, including ex-offenders and individuals recovering from drug addictions, even when your own insurer will not provide bonding? Information about Fidelity Bonding is available at your local Alaska Job Center or toll-free at 877-724-2539. Fidelity Bonding through the Alaska Department of Labor is 100% federally funded. This is an equal opportunity program. This message sponsored by the Department of Labor.
There are well over 150,000 walruses living in the U.S. waters of the Chukchi Sea. But how do we actually know that? So it's not an exact figure, and for the most part, researchers still have to count them, one by one. That means flying over, taking pictures, and then spending months tallying up the massive pinnipeds. New technology, though, has allowed walrus surveys to be conducted with drones, and hopes are that will provide more precise counts. It's something USGS research biologist and longtime walrus counter Tony Fishbach has been working on. Fishbach says drones have proven to be safer, and they've helped with a long-running problem of understanding how many walruses just happen to be out of view underwater when researchers fly over.
In 2007, when in the Chukchi Sea, the ice completely pulled back from the walruses' foraging grounds offshore, and they all came ashore in large numbers. And we realized, oh, we can count animals on shore. First, we used people and aircraft, but we realized that it's really hard to get survey aircraft near walrus in a safe way because you have to fly so high or so far offshore that you can't get good images of them, or it's just a very rare event when you have a beautiful bluebird day to count walruses.
Remind us, what's the risk there? I mean, if you disturb them, what could potentially happen?
So walruses are, they're naturally a little bit skittish. They're probably a little bit like a horse in terms of its mentality, in terms of responding to stimulus. So when walruses sense that there's some danger, they pack together as a herd and they want to go someplace they know they're safe, which is the water. So if they're all resting on land and there's something that disturbs them, it could be a gull, it could be a bear, it could be dogs, it could be an aircraft. If they're disturbed, they may get themselves moving. If they're disturbed enough, they'll move rapidly and they may crush each other on the way to get to safety.
So enter the drone. Mm-hmm. How has that changed the work that you're doing?
Yeah, they're very handy. They're small. They're portable. When the wind lies down and the rain stops, we get out of our tent, walk down the beach, and we fly a survey. The beauty of that is you can fly that survey even when there's cloud cover that's far too low for any occupied aircraft to survey. When we did this in 2018 and 19, we were able to complete 13 surveys in each year without much of an effort. The data that comes back is basically a bunch of images that get stitched together in a geographic way. So you can lay it on a version of the Earth, put a grid across that, subsample it, and start counting. These haulouts are huge. They extend at times up to an entire mile of beach. In any given haulout that we surveyed, we found animals, numbers of animals in excess of 50,000. At times we found 58,000, almost 60,000 walruses together on the beach. It's a phenomenal occurrence to have that many animals there together.
It sounds like it's probably less expensive, safer probably if you don't have people flying.
Safer for people and much safer for walruses.
Yeah. But what else are you able to learn from that other than just counting? Like, I imagine that for some studies you would want to land and maybe, you know, dart a walrus and check it out. But other than counting them with the drones, is there other information that you can grab that's not as invasive as that, I guess, you know?
So one other thing that we realize we can do with drones is we can We can look at the walruses, and we will look at them using a very structured flight where we have very precise knowledge of the altitude of the drone. We're using a survey-grade drone and a good lens. We can actually measure the walrus very specifically. We can basically put a virtual tape measure on that walrus and know how wide it is at the hips, underneath the armpits, what its body length is. And by working first with captive walruses at zoos and aquaria throughout North America and possibly even in Europe, we'll build up enough of a sample size that we can get a calibration to take our measurements from photos taken by a drone and understand what that means in terms of the walrus's real measures and its real body condition.
I think it was a year or two ago I had interviewed a researcher who was developing artificial intelligence to be able to put pictures of sea ice, and they were looking for seals in this case, into this, you know, computer that would count them and tell them this was a picture of a seal versus a rock or something like that. So when you're doing walrus counts, is it possible to do that same sort of thing with walrus?
When we did the counts off of the survey drone images we collected for walruses, we had to manually count them. And that was a very laborious process. 3.5 months, we sat in front of a screen and put dots over the walruses to get the counts down and make it accurate enough to be used for the population estimate. When we did that, we also created a training data set that can be used in developing automated mechanisms to do the counting through artificial intelligence. That has yet to be seen if that can really be done. It's been really successful with animals like penguins or seals that have a little bit of space between each other. When walruses get together on the beach, they are at incredible densities. They like to be together. They like to be on top of each other. And it varies how they are. There's density here, and there's a little bit more less density there throughout the haul out. You know, it may be a full mile of haul out. There's a lot of variability in how dense they are. And not only is there variability in the density, but there's also little ones mixed in with big ones. It's not as simple as working with other organisms that are more regular in size and more regular in their personal space, because they're stacked in there. And that's apparently how walruses like to be.
I have just one last question for you, Tony. Yeah. What do you think the walrus think about all this?
You know, the happy thing about the drones is I don't think they think about it, because I'm pretty darn certain they don't notice it. We're flying at altitude where you can't hear the drone, and it'd be pretty hard to see the drone. So I'm really, really happy about that. I want the walruses not to think about us. They have their own world to be thinking about.
They have their own problems to deal with.
Got their own concerns.
That was USGS research biologist Tony Fishbach with the Alaska Science Center Walrus Research Program. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin, Adeline Baxter, and Wesley Early in Anchorage, Jeremy Shanjuno, and Olivia Eberts in Bethel. If you want to send us a news tip, a question, or a comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby. Katie Anastas is our producer. And I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
On June 11th, Alaska will have the first round of a special election to fill the open seat in Congress. Every Alaskan voter will receive a ballot in the mail. In the June 11th primary, you can only vote for one person. The ranking happens later. Pick your favorite candidate, sign, and get a friend to sign as well. Then mail it back. And remember that June 11th is the Pick One primary. This message sponsored by Alaskans for Better Elections.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.